All right, here we go. This is the inaugural SLC Dunk Cast. For SLC Dunk, of course, we have a lot of our writers and contributors here. We have myself, as you know me, Basketball John. We have Clark, is it Poho?
Is that Poyo or Pojo?
Poyo, okay.
It doesn't right. matter. I just made it up, so it doesn't really matter how you pronounce it.
I didn't know if it was Spanish pronunciation or how that went, but that works. And then we have Shums. And
yo, what's up?
We have Monty from all the way around on the other side of the world. Hi, Monty. So I don't know what we're really going to expect you guys, what everybody expects from us. We're just going to try this out, see how it works. Like I was telling everybody earlier, either this will be really great, the start of something really great, or we'll just crash and burn. So either way, it'll be a nice ride for everybody involved. So let's just start. We'll say, first of all, we'll just start just a brief introduction of everybody, introduce themselves, and just a little fact about themselves. We'll start with myself, I assume. So, I don't know, this is Basketball John. I've blogged at SLC Dunk for, it'll be 3 years here in just about a week, if you can believe that. Before that, I ran basketballjohn.com, and then I had some little blogspot website before that that was kind of bad to look at when you go back now. So, they say that you have some people have a face for radio. I say I probably have a voice for blogging. So that's my claim. So thanks for everybody reading SLC Dunk, and I'd like to thank everybody here that's on this podcast for contributing to SLC Dunk. So these guys are really good. We're going to have Amar tonight, but he has to save lives or something tonight rather than do this podcast. So let's start with Clark. Go ahead, Clark.
Hey, everybody. I'm Clark Pojo. It's a username I made up in the sixth grade when I needed a username. I don't know what it means. I live in North Carolina, and I've been blogging for Salt Lake City Dunk for about 18 months now. And I also write over at my own blog at jazzingitup.com, so feel free to visit that, even though I kind of have I'll always have fond feelings for Salt Lake City Dunk first and foremost. I'm excited to talk about the NBA today because no one in North Carolina cares about the NBA. They love their college basketball. Even the Bobcats fans, I think, just think they're going to a college game and they end up at an NBA game on accident. So I'm excited to talk about the NBA because no one out here will.
So is that their marketing scheme then? They tell them that they're coming to that the Bobcats are playing the Tar Heels that night or something. And
yeah, they're like Division II Charlotte Bobcats, NCAA, whatever, you know. So I don't know. No one cares about the NBA out here. Seriously.
All right, hey, and I just looked up Pojo, and I can't find any graphic translations for it. So I think you're safe.
I think it was like a little video game character that I saw. I really honestly don't remember, but I just made it up on a whim when I needed a username. So there you have it.
Nice. All right, well, thanks. And Shums, go ahead.
All right, this is Shums. That name comes from my last name. You can call me Shums. I used to blog a long time ago on the older incarnation of UtahJazzBlog.net, which I think that URL has been taken over by somebody else now. And so I migrated over to SLC Dunk because the software platform is way better and because the people are way better, as evidenced by these stellar individuals that you're listening to right now who aren't named Shums. as far as other writing that I do, I don't have my own blog. I do write for SLC Dunk. At times, I also comment frequently, and I have my Twitter, which is at the Shums, where you can find other information like how much I love Mega Man and the reigning MLS Cup champions, Real Salt Lake, who I am missing to talk to you right now. And well, no, I'm not bitter.
Well, are they playing right now? Isn't it snowing over there?
It's not snowing so far as I know. I'm indoors. I'm downtown Salt Lake right now, but it is. It was 2-0 at halftime, so 2-0 for RSL.
Oh, good.
which is the good kind of 2-0. It should stay that way.
Do you say nothing in soccer, though? I thought it was 2-0 or nil or...
Nil?
Nil?
Isn't that the proper... If you want to be a pretentious soccer fan that has call everything by English terms, then yeah, you would say nil.
Okay, I didn't know that there's any other kind of soccer fan, so... I'm just kidding, Shums.
No, that's fair.
Thanks, Shums. No, I should get into soccer, and I mean, it's when we have the first Utah major professional sports championship come from the soccer team that's been here for just a handful of years, then, you know, the Jazz really need to step things up, so...
Hey, if Real can win a title, anyone can win a title. I have renewed faith in the Jazz because the crappiest franchise ever in soccer won a championship.
Yeah, they snuck in and just went through. But
we don't have to talk about that. This is the Jets.
Yeah, we'll do that for a Real soapbox or something like that.
Yeah, we'll do a whole nother 5-minute podcast on the Real Salt Lake sometime.
All right, and last but definitely not least, Monty, who kind of keeps everybody in check and, in my opinion, is probably the biggest Jazz fan. Out of everybody that I know of. So say hello, Monty.
Hello, and I'm very honored you said that.
No, I really think that, I mean, just your, I mean, Jazz Fanatical, your website, jazzfanatical.wordpress.com. I don't think the fanatical is overstated in that regard.
Yes, I choose the Jazz over my social life.
Which is worth it for the Who Dressed Him posts alone.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Did you see the Birdman's plaid dress, or his shirts
from yesterday?
Yeah, like that, a whole series. I think that's all he's worn.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much his whole wardrobe.
And even I think didn't Boozer's little boys have plaid
Andre's
shirts?
Andre's
Andre's did. That's right. Yeah. So what else do you want to tell us about you, Monty?
I'm Moni. That's from my first name. I also have a voice for blogging. I blog at Living and Dying by the Jazz. But if you're going to only visit one jazz blog, it should be SLP Dunk.
I think a lot of your stuff should be on our blog as well. Your stuff is great. But
thanks.
Anyway, Moni, I know, has to defend herself against tons and tons of Laker fans where she lives. So that's not an easy task to do.
It's not. It's really, really not.
And speaking of which, before we get to the Lakers, I guess let's go over the Denver series. Let's kind of get into this thing and stop, I guess, get to the point. So let's go to the number of questions that we have. Who are you guys' three MVPs of the Denver series? Let's go with Clark.
All right. Well, I'm actually you should go with me. I'm going to cheat a little bit. I couldn't pick three. I have to go with four. Because,
no, you got to have just three. Just three. That's why there's three.
All right. You got me then.
You got to cut somebody out.
It's going to be. You know, I'm gonna go with Darren Williams and Carlos Boozer, and I'm gonna go different. I'm gonna go Wesley Matthews in number three. He was tied with Paul Millsap, but I'll bump Paul just because you know, he did what he expected to do. But Wesley Matthews, I mean, Darren and Carlos isn't a lot you can say. They played really well and with a lot of heart. I was really impressed with Carlos Boozer this series. I thought he played with some hustle. And I thought he killed our pick-and-roll defense at times, but I thought he, like, gave a good effort, which if he does that, then I give him thumbs up. But I just want to – Wesley Matthews, that guy did everything. He guarded J.R. Smith and shut him down at times and frustrated him, made him put the ball on the floor, and he made Carmelo Anthony work for almost every point he got. And then beyond that, beyond the scoring, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when Wesley Matthews is scoring, that's just you know, gravy on top of the mashed potatoes. But the guy is unbelievable and is quickly – I forget at times he's a rookie, and he's quickly becoming my favorite defender to watch since the days of Brian Russell and Shandon Anderson, which is saying a lot. You know, and I was just thinking today, if we had this Wesley Matthews against the San Antonio Spurs 3 years ago, we would probably be advancing in that series. So, you know, he's the two guard we've been missing when we had Derek Fisher getting lit up by Manu Ginobili. But anyway, I don't think you can say enough about Wesley Matthews. So I just wanted to throw him in my top three MVPs for that series.
Yeah, those are definitely picks. I mean, it's going to be hard between Matthews and Millsap. I have to agree with you a lot on Matthews because, yeah, just the way, I mean, especially in game six where he, you know, what did Carmelo hit? Six shots? Six field goals or something like that?
Yeah.
So that's huge. So.
And just one other thing, that's the thing that impresses me about Wesley Matthews is that guy learns on the job playing defense. He gets better and better with every game, and I'm super excited to see what he does this next round.
Yeah, it's kind of a cliche that he doesn't play like a rookie, but he really doesn't. So,
yeah, absolutely.
How about you, Shums?
Well, Clark kind of took a lot of my thunder there. He talked a lot about Wes Matthews, and I would put him at my second MVP after Deron Williams, of course. To say a word about Deron, we have not really seen him take down one of the best point guards in the league head-to-head, aside from everybody knows that Deron has outplayed Chris Paul when he's done it head-to-head. But he played so well against Chauncey Billups that the Nuggets were better served at times to have Ty Lawson in the game just because of his speed and because Billups honestly seemed a little shook just trying to stay in front of Deron Williams. He was really impressive. And I know that Aflalo guarded Deron for a lot of the series, but I can't say enough good things about Deron Williams. Everyone knows that. Wesley Matthews, Clark took everything that I was going to say, but he is my second favorite player on the Jazz already, just as a rookie. The biggest thing that I noticed, especially in last night's game, is that he has no fear. He is not intimidated by anyone. He doesn't get overly excited, but he doesn't get down on himself either. And he makes mistakes. He is a rookie, and you can tell it sometimes. But his play is far beyond his years, and that biggest thing, especially when we see other players are affected so much by lack of confidence, that's one thing that Wes Matthews does not struggle with, and it is very impressive.
Yeah, I don't know. We've seen a lot of dominating performances from Deron before, but you know, over the course of this entire series, he really just has been kind of over the top with, you know, Chauncey follow. It didn't matter who they threw at him. You know, he took it right at him and it was just completely. I mean, he was the series MVP. So, Monty, how about you?
Well, I think you guys pretty much said it all already. I really have trouble picking three guys out of the team because I think we won as a team. Deron, obviously, first, but Boozer, Millsap, Matthews, all huge factors.
Yeah, they were. I mean, Boozer. I mean, I don't think we gave enough credit to him. He put up some large numbers, and I thought in Game Six he had five assists, and you know, three of those at least were just some nice passes into Millsap. That one to Price for the reverse layup that was late. You know, those are just huge assists. He made his typical Boozer mistakes, but overall he just. I think he was right up there as well. So. And give Fez credit, too. I mean, he had a poor, you know, last couple games, but he was the reason we probably won game two, and, you know, he added a lot there. So, moving right along, what was everybody's predictions for the Denver series? Monty?
Nuggets in six.
Clark?
You know, originally I had the Nuggets in seven, and then I don't know if I ever switched my prediction, but I just remember, this sounds so mean, but as soon as Okur went out and I knew Fasenko was going to get minutes, I actually just, I don't know if I ever picked the Jazz to win, but I actually thought that they would, you know, at least make it a fantastic series. So I wasn't as surprised as I thought I might be that they won.
Huh. What about you, Shams?
I said Nuggets in seven before the series, and game two changed everything. I was gloom and doom after Okur went out, and game two turned everything around.
Yeah, I think most people. I was the same. I thought Nuggets in seven. I thought everybody would hold serve on their home courts. But yeah, that game two. You know, that was I don't know, that was probably some of the most inspired basketball we've seen ever from the Jazz, and you know, at least from this group of players. I mean, the down Okur, down AK, and you know, just one of the best performances that we have. I still have that on my DVR, as a matter of fact, because that was such a good game. So, all right, last thing to wrap up the Denver series. Give me your favorite moment from the series, and just a quick what you thought the key to the series was. Let's go. Let's give Shums the floor first, so he doesn't have his stuff stolen by Clark.
Well, now I got to think of something right now. You know, I don't know if there's an individual moment, but every time that Wesley Matthews hit a three-pointer, just every one of them got me out of my seat, got me yelling and screaming and you know, giving vicious, enthusiastic comments on the site, in the game threads. Every one of those, maybe it's just because he was open a lot, maybe because he made them a lot, maybe it's somebody that people didn't expect to make them as much, but there was really nobody that, or no moment that excited me more than seeing a huge clutch three-pointer. And that's the other big thing, is that they all seemed to be at huge moments.
Shums, you disappoint. I thought for sure it was going to be game two, and boom, bitches.
That would be Tosin Kufis, yeah. first two-point score in the history of the NBA.
Oh, my gosh. How did I miss that? You know, after coming up with all of that, that's a whole other question for a whole other podcast. But, oh, gosh. The Koof. Okay, yeah.
All right, no problem. What, anything that was really key to the series?
Are you still asking me?
Yeah, if you have anything. There was two parts, sorry. Anything, or was that the key to the series?
No, not just that. I do think that it was Matthews and CJ Miles combined defense on Anthony, and then team defense everywhere else. And we know that Carmelo, you know, gets down on himself. He gets angry with the refs. He takes himself out of the ballgame sometimes. But I was encouraged by, one, how willing Matt Harpring was to come into the locker room and give personal tips to both CJ and Wes, and then how well they took those to heart and put them into action during the games. It was really funny sometimes to watch and to listen to Harpring say stuff about, okay, here's how you need to defend Melo on this play or on the next play, and you would then listen to CJ after the game, and he would be saying exactly the same things word for word, and you could see how effective it was.
So maybe Harpring will get a little piece of the playoff money this year around. All right, Monty, what about you? What a favorite moment, and if you thought there was any main key to the series?
Favorite moment? The play that really sticks out in my mind is Wesley blocking Melo, and also the Melo's Fasenko, his post-game interview.
Yeah.
As for key, I think like Shum said, I think it was Wesley and also CJ's help on defending Melo.
Yeah, they were big on him. I mean, the block in game six that Matthews had on Melo, and I also loved, even though it was in a losing effort, but his block on Melo in game five when Melo's coming across and kind of threw that jumper at the top of the key and
knocked him over.
Just knocked him right down. I mean, that was great. And I'm with everybody. I mean, Matthews, I think, was the key to the series, just the way he played defense and his hustle, and I mean, you could just see that he took, you know, he seemed to be physically pained when the Jazz lost, and kind of put it on himself to do things. And I mean, he did it on both sides. I mean, you know, we might have to change his name officially to undrafted rookie, but he really is. I think he's been the biggest. You know, if there's an X factor, then he's the one. So. Also, my favorite moment of the series, just outside of what you guys have said as well, I've loved, I mean, those last two and ones from Millsap, I thought were huge and kind of backbreakers for the game and for the series. I mean, I think that kind of did Denver in. So Clark, sorry, man.
That's all right.
What was your favorite moment of the series and your key moment?
You know, my favorite moment of the series was easily the last 5 or 6 minutes of Game 2. I think after the series is over, there is actually only one game out of six that was even, you know, close at the end of the game, and that had everything. I mean, you had a good play by the Nuggets, a good comeback. You had discipline by the Jazz, and you had some killer 3-point shots and free throw shooting by Kyle Korver and other members. I just thought, you know, that game was just awesome, and was really the only close game in the series, although it seemed a lot closer. My favorite moment, or the key to the series, really was, you know, was really the lack of Denver's composure was really the key to the series, because I was thinking, it always bothers me when Jerry Sloan gives the same answers every interview, you know, well, we just got to go play basketball, you know, we're not going to cry ourselves to sleep or whatever he says. And it kind of used to bother me, but now that I'm looking at it, like, Denver was a built-in excuse from the start. We don't have George Karl, and they just had, you know, the refs are against us and everyone's flopping. But, you know, Sloan doesn't let the Jazz talk like that. And I really think that was the difference, was Denver just couldn't hang with us. They gave up too easily. They could have probably stolen game four if they hadn't given up halfway through. And then they just completely melted down in game six to really almost hand us the game. So I thought that was the key to the series, was their just lack of mental toughness. I was surprised.
You can't really, maybe we should have mentioned this from the Denver point of view, you know, maybe it's not so much that the key to the series was things that we did, although the Jazz did a ton of great things, but we know that the Nuggets aren't a mentally tough team, and I had no idea how much that would be exacerbated without George Karl. And that might be an excuse, but I really do think that, you know, as much as we might have loved Adrian Dantley as a player, he could not manage that team, that locker room, in-game presence. I was at a game three at the Energy Solutions Arena, or three or four, no, it was three, no, four. And it's been a long series. I was at game four, and you could see the players walk back to the huddle. You could see them when they needed to get subbed out because they had too many fouls or whatever, and just the despondence on the faces of the Nuggets players without, and there was no way to lift them up, and Dantley wasn't the guy to do it.
But then, I mean, and just one last thing with Jerry Sloan, I mean, the guy is unbelievable. A house could fall on the team and take out, you know, half the team, and they could play with half the Utah Flash people, and they'd say the same thing, you know, we all make a paycheck and we're all going to go play hard. So, I mean, that really showed up this series in the team's demeanor and composure.
Yeah, as he would say, well, what are you going to do, cry about it?
Yeah, he's so awesome.
You got to go out there and play anyway, right? They're not going to give us any breaks, so... Yeah, I mean, that was huge. I mean, especially you could see in the closing minutes, you know, the technical foul on Martin, you know, after he pushed Darren, and just frustration calls and fouls. So, I mean, those were, to me, the key was just, we've seen it kind of all season, and we haven't in the past, and that's the Jazz's ability to close out games. I mean, they, like in game two, game six, especially, you know, Denver came back in both of those, and, you know, especially after we had leads, and they were able to close them out. They got what they needed to do done, you know, and everybody kind of played a key part in that. So, great series. I'm glad it's behind us. I'm not looking forward to this next series too much, though, against the Lakers. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, has this been just a collision course with the Lakers? Are we going to have to get past them to, you know, have any chance at getting in the, you know, advancing? It looks like we just have destiny. You know, it's a lost type destiny that we're just getting drawn back to the island that's the Lakers. You know, we have to finish business with the Lakers before we can move on. What do you guys think about this Lakers series? What's your predictions? I guess let's start with let's see, who we go with. Let's go with Monty again.
I hope that the Jazz will come out and compete. And my source of hope here is that I didn't think that in the Denver series the Jazz would do too well because of regular season matchups, but I feel like a more mature and cohesive team showed up for the playoffs. So that gives me hope for the series. And also, as Shums and Clark touched on earlier, I think Fasenko playing instead of Memo makes a difference. just because Fasenko on the floor provides a path of resistance to the basket, and we've seen what happens when we have Memo and Boozer in there, or Boozer and Millsap in there against Gasol and Odom, and that just doesn't, it just doesn't work for us.
Yeah, that's bad matchups there. I think I'm getting some feedback from somebody. That's all right. Anyway, I think with this coming up, we're going to have to... Here's a preview from what I sent to the Lakers blog, Silver Screen and Roll. It's kind of a preview for the coming series. I sent him... We've all seen the pattern. Siler's even brought it up in that the Jazz start out playing the Lakers and get blown out at the beginning of the games, make a huge run in the third quarter, the fourth quarter, get close, and then, you know, the Lakers just put them away. And I think if the Jazz are going to have any success in this series and not just fall into the same trap that we've seen the last couple of years, is that they just have to come out and shock them in game one. I mean, they have to take game one. They have the stat that I don't know, like Phil Jackson's team.
Phil Jackson.
There we go. I called him Phil Johnson again. Phil Jackson's team.
What an insult.
Sorry, Phil Johnson. But his teams are like 45-0 or something like that when they win the first game of this series. So the Jazz just have to come out and put the shock, you know, shock everybody and take that game, steal that game. Otherwise, I just think we see a lot of the same pattern we've seen. So. What do you think, Clark?
I agree with that. And I have some hope. I mean, part of the fun, we know it's going to be a tough series and that the odds are stacked against us. But, one, this team is playing with a lot of confidence. I like the swagger right now. Darren feels like he can do just about anything. He didn't have a great game the other night, but I've never seen him play like this. And then, you know, the additions of Fasenko, if he can control the paint at all, and then add in Matthews. The nice thing is that if Kirilenko comes back for any of this series, he doesn't have to be our perimeter defender anymore. Really, I think I prefer Matthews getting the Kobe assignment late in the game or for most of the game, and I think he's going to make Kobe work. I agree we need to we're going to have to take one of the... I don't agree that we need to win game one, but because if you remember when we almost beat them in game five a few years ago, if we can just get some confidence and take care of business at home... You know, obviously we have to win in L.A., and, I wouldn't be super surprised if we did. Hopefully it will be tomorrow, but I expect big things from Darren, and if some guys can hit some open shots, then, you just never know.
Yeah, I remember when Ronnie Brewer, was it last year, I think, that he said that you can kind of be blinded by the bright lights and the stars of L.A., and one of the things that I was impressed with the Thunder was that, you know, they didn't seem to be, you know, just being naive about things or what, but they just did not seem to be affected at all by that big crowd or by that big stage like, you know, it seems that the Jazz have been. So I think they have to come out and set the tone early and just let them know that they're not going to back down. So what about you, Shums?
I think what you just touched on right there in the Thunder series, you know, they're such a young team themselves that whether it's just the confidence of youth or the stupidity of youth or the lack of understanding, but they just did not care that they were playing the Los Angeles Lakers and Kobe Bryant and playing in the Staples Center. They just didn't care. And I think this Jazz team is better equipped to have that same sort of mentality than past teams have been that have played against the Lakers. It's still a mental block. It's still, you know, like playing the Spurs, but we got over that hump in the regular season this year. So I think there is something different about this team, whether it's Wesley Matthews winning the starting job, whether it's Millsap getting his contract and coming into his own a little bit, whether it's that... maybe Fasenko is going to have – we know he'll have to get minutes because Memo's out. Maybe it is those injuries that that we know without Kirilenko for the first couple games and without Okura at all, that everyone realizes that it's more important to give production, to be on them, and to not be intimidated. And I really hope that we won't be.
Yeah, and I think what Kirilenko, from what the latest reports is that He's maybe he's out game one, possibly game two, but not likely. But he said definitely game three. You know, I think that's going to be a huge moment, him coming back, you know, the first game in a long time, and the first game was there at the ESA. I think that crowd's going to go crazy. I'm giddy. I'm waiting for it, and I know Monty probably is as well.
Yes.
How do you think Kirilenko affects this series, Monty?
I think he'd be huge. I think he's talked about coming off the bench when he returns rather than going right back into the starting lineup.
Right.
He said that he didn't want to mess with CJ or Wesley's confidence by coming back into the starting lineup, and that just made me love him more. But I think he would provide a huge spark. I think his defense would help everyone else play defense better. And it's been so many times where he said, I'm aiming for game what, that I won't really believe it till I see it when he comes back.
Yeah, so do you think this will be better than the Derek Fisher return?
Maybe not. I don't think there's not that kind of emotional buildup from when Derek Fisher came back in. And he came in, you know, mid-game
right.
with the escort from the police and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that might have been a bit bigger. I think the little shot in the arm that it'll give the team, I think, might have the same effect. Just having AK out there. I mean, I think for the bench, most of all, I mean, it'll be nice to have more than two players being able to come off the bench for the most part, you know.
Right.
So he'll be huge there. So what are your who's the MVP of this series? That was one of Clark's questions. Who's going to be the MVP of this series? Clark, let's start with you since that was your question.
Oh gosh, you know, I'm gonna go with Darren on this one. It's got to be Darren, really. The guy is going to have to create open shots for everybody else because no one else can really create their own shot against the length of the Lakers. And when you really look at the games in the past, Darren's created some open looks for guys, but for some reason Korver can't hit an open shot, and we'll see about Matthews. And if we can just slow down the Lakers at all, you know, I think Darren controls the tempo so well. He's going to hopefully own Derek Fisher as much as he can, and no bench guy. It really, they're going to have to end up guarding Darren with Kobe Bryant, I imagine, and that'll be fun to see because in the past, Darren's taken Kobe Bryant to school a few times, so that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, I'm going to be absolutely ticked if Derek Fisher shoots anything over 35% in this series.
Seriously.
The guy is unbelievable against us.
What in the world? Like, he cannot miss. He could check it up from half court every time, and I would have no doubt that those would all go in. I mean, just... I don't know if he's just in their heads or but whatever it is. Maybe he feels slighted or something, but those corner threes that he nails every stinking game, I just can't stand anymore. It just drives me nuts.
I don't think it's just Fisher. I always feel like Darren plays like he's giving Fisher too much respect.
Yeah.
So I think a key will be Darren has to take it to Fisher from tip-off.
The student must become the master and take it to him. What about Shams? Who's the MVP of the series?
I can't stress enough how important what Monty and what you just said, that Darren cannot let himself fall into any tricks of Derek Fisher's. I know that because in the past, Fisher has played really well against Darren. He knows a lot of his tricks. He knows how to draw charges on Darren. It's tough. It's really funny how Fisher can play horribly against Russell Westbrook and then play fantastic against Darren, and I'm very afraid that will happen, and I hope it won't. And I think if any year, then this will be the year that it won't, because Darren is absolutely on fire. He had such a tremendous series.
Yeah, that's going to be key right now, so... Clark, did we get to you on this? Who's your MVP?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I already...
Right. Monty. Did we get Monty's MVP? Monty's MVP.
Darren.
Darren's going to be the MVP? All right. Yeah, I think... I mean, he has to be there. Darren... I mean, I thought he... Game 6 was... You know, he was still great. Wasn't as good as the first five games. Abe and Tom, he seemed to be complaining a little bit more, which I know we've all talked about a lot. He even got on CJ one time I saw, and that wasn't really complaining, but you know, when Billups drew that three by, you know, diving in front of him, that came like right after a pick by somebody. I can't remember. I guess it was Mel, if it was CJ. But as Darren was storming off the court because it was his fourth foul, he was pointing at CJ and saying something. I'm pretty much, you know, you gotta slow him down or something. But yeah, Darren's got to be composed, and I think he's gonna be the MVP. My key to the series, I think, is that we're gonna have to have people just nail those outside shots, because if we have Bynum and Gasol and Odom that can just camp out in the lane, Boozer and Millsap are just not going to be able to do their thing. I mean, even worse than you know what it normally is. So, one last thing we'll talk about: how does having Matthews in there over Brewer change anything in this series, Shums?
You know, Brewer had experience guarding Kobe, and it didn't seem like he was ever all that intimidated. But I think, and this is kind of maybe a little backwards to talk about it this way, but I think Kobe knew that Ronnie Brewer was not an offensive threat, so Kobe didn't have to guard Ronnie. And I think that fed into kind of Kobe's confidence, his lack of respect, and it may even have fed into Ronnie Brewer not defending quite as well as maybe he could have. I think that because Wesley Matthews is a better shooter, is a better offensive player, and I think probably has a stronger mental mindset, I think that he will do better than Ronnie Brewer ever did on Kobe. Matthews has shown that he's not scared. When we played the Lakers earlier in the year, he said as much. He said that it's my job to guard the other team's two guard, which is usually the best player, and that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it, and I'm not scared about it. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, he seems to relish that, and he's going to have to hit some shots early for Kobe to, you know, to kind of take him seriously. So hopefully that'll happen. Monty, what do you think?
I love Matthews, his veteran. Well, he's a rookie, but I love his veteran mindset, and I think he's made an impression on players around the like. After we played Cleveland, LeBron took him aside. I think after we played the Magic, Dwight Howard took him aside too. And I think there will probably be some jitters at first when the series starts. I actually remember, I think it was the first time we played the Lakers this season, and Matthews had a horrible game, and he told Darren afterwards something like, "I'll never play like that again." So I think he might have some jitters at first, but I think he'll get stronger as the series goes on, and any mistakes he might make or any lapses, I think he'll work to improve on them with each game.
Yeah, we've talked about it, you know, all the time, but it's just that mentality that he seems to have that puts him above, you know, the rest of a lot of the players in the league that are, you know, that have been in the league already for, you know, 3 or 4 years. So, Clark, we'll give you the final word on that. What do you think about Matthews over Brewer?
Well, I mean, nothing against Brewer, because Brewer is one of my favorite players, and I think a lot has been blown out of proportion about trading him away and how that's made our team so much better. But I do actually believe Wesley Matthews is a better fundamental defender, and I think he improves a little bit quicker. I expect him to be pretty fantastic on defense by the end of this series, if not right away. But I actually have a special guest who wanted to say something about it too.
Oh yes, did he?
Right,
did
here
he,
we go.
Did he make the trip?
Yeah, he called me up the other day and he wanted to come visit me at North Carolina. So I. So, okay, hey, big guy, come on over.
Well, what is it? Well, hey, guys, this is a big fess. I believe that I am key to series against Lakers, because everyone get against me for, like, eating at Denny's all the time and eating all their Grand Slams, but I believe that all the Grand Slams and pancakes and bacons has made me a very bigger guy, and I shall be able to stop Pau Gasol in the lane and perhaps block his shots, or at least slap his beard off of his faces. So I believe that I am actually key to series, and hopefully get some some hammer dunks.
So Fez, what's your prediction for the series? That how many games does this series go, and who's the winner?
Oh, I'm not good at Nostradamusizing, but I could possibly guess that we will beat the Lakers in six games, but no guarantees, or I'm not Rasheed Wallace or anything, so no guarantees.
Fez, what's it going to take to get you on Twitter?
Agent
or Sloan shut you down
Coach
on that.
No, Coach Sloan says yet to do Twitter. He will not allow me to whine or complain or be non-professional, which is Twitter's non-professional, so I cannot be on it.
Well, maybe you should hire a ghostwriter that way you can still claim it's not you, but you can still get the word out there.
Ghost Rider was one of my favorite television shows on the PBS. So I believe if you speak of this ghost who flies around and writes things, then yes, I will try to hire him.
Wait, you got the Ghost Rider in the Ukraine when you were a kid? Well, PBS?
It just started about 2 years ago. We're a little bit behind, but has quickly become one of my favorite shows on the PBS.
Well, Faz, I hope you dominate. Dominate the big man of Lakers. We're going to definitely need you.
Okay, I'm going to go get a chicken biscuit in North Carolina. So.
All right, you better hurry back before Sloan notices you're gone. You're supposed to probably be in bed.
Okay, don't tell anybody.
We'll play a song after game one.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Monty, no special guest there with you?
Nope.
Yao's not over there rehabilitating or anything?
Whoa.
I might have to say that Booch might be coming after Clark.
Oh.
Oh, gosh, no.
Hey, I'm taking good care of the seven-footer. I bought a big bed for him to stay on.
All right, good. Hey, Monty, what's your prediction for the series?
She doesn't want to make one.
Oh.
I'm going to say take it one game at a time, like Jerry would say.
Okay. Mm. Very Sloan-esque. All right, Chums?
You want a prediction?
Yeah.
Pain.
Pain for the...
Does anyone get that reference? Nobody got that reference? Okay.
Sorry.
I was being Mr. T. Mr. T is a dated reference that nobody here will get, and they should
not. Oh, I love the Mr. T. He's a great mohawk.
Fez, I thought you were sleeping.
Fez, I didn't know you were there.
Well, go back to bed, then.
No, I think it's going to be really hard. I have confidence in our team. I believe in them more against the Lakers than I ever have in any past series. But it's destiny. We gotta get over it, and I don't know if we can. And I hope we will, and I hope we compete. I just, like Moni said, I just hope that we don't look scared. I hope that we don't act like on the floor that we're afraid. I hope we don't buy in to the whole playing against LA and against Phil Jackson and against the referees or anything else. I hope that we just put it all out of our minds, because when we focus on our basketball and our team, we have success.
Well said. I am just going to go give you a flat Jazz in six. They still won in the first two games at L.A., and they hold it at home. I think this is – I mean, if the team's going to ever get past L.A., if a Jazz team's going to get past a Kobe-led L.A. team, it's going to be this one. I mean, next year, with everything up in the air, I think they have to do it now. And we're going to see – this team has shown – I mean, they've swept the Spurs this season. They swept Portland. They've come back from large deficits. They've finished out games. It's a different team that we've seen, and I really think they have the opportunity to take it in six. Obviously, they're going to have to win in LA, something that hasn't been done. But I think that's what's going to happen. Six games, the Jazz. Maybe a little homeristic, but I don't see why they couldn't if they, like Shum said, if they play their game. So, all right, well. We said about 15 to 20 minutes. We are pushing 1 hour. I don't know how many people are going to be listening at this point.
Just put it up.
put up what's good and let them listen if they want to.
And we'll tease Vasinko at the end. Maybe that'll get them all the way to the end. So, anyway, thank you very much, you guys. Appreciate you taking an hour out of your Saturday nights or early Sundays to come and do this. So we will definitely have to do this again. I think it's gone really well.
Let's do it before the next series against the Spurs or the Suns.
Yeah, that series itself is going to be very good. So, all right, we'll call it a night then, and you guys have a fun one.
All right, peace out, guys.
Bye.